except for the Marabar Caves, and they are 20 miles off. The city of Chandrapur presents nothing extraordinary. Edged rather than washed by the River Ganges, it trails for a couple of miles along the bank, scarcely distinguishable from the rubbish it deposits freely. Inland, the prospect alters. There's an oval maidan and a long, sallow hospital. Houses belonging to the Eurasians stand on the high ground by the railway station. Beyond the railway, which runs parallel to the river, the land sinks and then rises again steeply. On this second rise is laid out the little civil station, and viewed hence, Chandrapur appears to be a totally different place. It is a city of gardens. The toddy palms and neem trees and mangoes and people that were hidden by the bazaars now become visible and in their turn hide the bazaars. The civil station provokes no emotion. It charms not, neither does it repel. It is sensibly planned, with a red brick club on its brow and further back a grocer's and a cemetery. And the bungalows are disposed along roads that intersect at right angles. The sky settles everything, not only climates and seasons, but when the earth shall be beautiful. By herself she can do little, only feeble outbursts of flowers. But when the sky chooses, glory can rain into the Chandrapur bazaars, or a benediction pass from horizon to horizon. The sky can do this because it is so strong and so enormous. No mountains infringe on the curve. Only in the south, where a group of fists and fingers are thrust up through the soil, is the endless expanse interrupted. These fists and fingers are the Marabar Hills, containing the extraordinary caves. The young Dr. Aziz is rattling along the road on his bicycle with speed. He is hungry.
Oh, out of my way, children. Don't dawdle in the street. Careful, no brakes on this bicycle. Hamidullah! Am I late?
Aziz, do not apologize. You are always late.
Kindly answer the question. Am I late? Has Mahmood Ali eaten all the food? If so, I'll go elsewhere. Oh, Mr. Mahmood Ali, how are you?
I am very well, Dr. Aziz.
Aziz, sit down. Don't chatter. We are having a very serious talk.
Oh, may I? Why are you both looking so serious?
We are discussing as to whether or not it is possible to be friends with an Englishman.
And what are your conclusions on the subject?
In my humble opinion, it is not possible.
I see.
I disagree. At least I only contend that it is possible in England. I received a very cordial welcome at Cambridge.
That was a long time ago.
Nevertheless,
it is not possible here, Aziz. The red-nosed boy, Heslop, has insulted me in court again. Oh. Until recently, he was quite a nice boy, but the others have got hold of him.
They have no chance here, that is my point. They come out intending to be gentlemen and are told it will not do. Look at Leslie and Blakiston. Mm. Now it's your red-nosed boy, and Fielding will go next. I remember when Turton first came out here. It was in another part of the province. You fellows will not believe me, but I have driven with Turton in his carriage.
Turton's own carriage, really?
Oh, yes. We were once quite close. He has shown me his stamp collection.
He would expect you to steal it now. But I think the red-nosed boy would be far worse than Turton.
They all become exactly the same. I give any Englishman 2 years, be he Turton or Burton. And I give any Englishwoman 6 months. All are exactly alike.
I do not agree. For my own part, I find profound differences among our rulers. Red Nose mumbles. Mm. Turton talks distinctly. Mrs. Turton takes bribes.
Bribes?
Surely you've heard about the incident when the Turtons were British officials presiding over a canal scheme? Somewhere in central India.
No. What incident?
Some Raja or other gave Mrs. Turton a sewing machine in solid gold so that the water would run through his estate.
And does it?
No. That's why Mrs. Turton is so skillful. See, when we poor blacks take bribes, we perform what we are bribed to perform, and the law discovers us in consequence. The English take, and do nothing. I admire them.
We all admire them. Aziz, please pass me the hookah.
A little while longer. I've just got it going.
But you are a very selfish boy. God, where is our dinner? Serve it now. Take my case. Young Hugh Bannister. Here is the son of my dear, my dead friends, the Reverend and Mrs. Bannister, whose goodness to me in England I shall never forget. In the vacations, their rectory became my home. They entrusted their children to me. I often carried little Hugh about. I took him up to the funeral of Queen Victoria and held him in my arms above the crowd.
Queen Victoria was different.
I now hear that this boy is in business as a leather merchant in Kanpur. Imagine how I long to see him. But it is useless. The other Anglo-Indians will have got to him long ago. He will probably think I want something, and I cannot face that from the son of my old friends.
Can we stop talking about the English? Please? Who cares whether we're friends with them or not? Let's shut them out of our minds and be happy in each other's company.
Ah, come, my friends, let's eat.
Excuse me, sir.
What is it?
A message for the doctor.
Old Callender wants to see me at his bungalow. You'd think he had the politeness to say why.
Some case.
Maybe, maybe not. He knows it's my dinner hour and chooses to interrupt me every time to show his power.
It might be a serious case.
Eat your dinner quickly and then go.
The civil surgeon, Major Callender, was out by the time Dr. Aziz arrived at his bungalow. His servant informed the young doctor that he had waited, left no message, and had departed for the club. Infuriated at this snub, Aziz began to walk back home. He was an athletic little man, daintily put together, but really very strong. Nevertheless, walking fatigued him, as it fatigues everyone in India, except for the newcomer. At the edge of the civil station, he turned into a mosque to rest. He'd always liked this mosque. It was gracious. Where he sat, he looked into three arcades, whose darkness was illuminated by a small hanging lamp and by the moon. The front, in full moonlight, had the appearance of marble.
One day, I too will build a mosque. Smaller than this, but in perfect taste. So that all who pass by will experience the perfect happiness I feel now. And near it, under a low dome, will be my tomb with a Persian inscription. Alas, without me for thousands of years, the rose will blossom and the spring will bloom. But those who have secretly understood my heart, they will approach and visit the grave where I lie.
He had seen the quatrain on the tomb of a Deccan king and regarded it as a profound philosophy. The secret understanding of the heart. He repeated the phrase with tears in his eyes.
The secret understanding of the heart.
And as he did so, one of the pillars of the mosque seemed to quiver. Another pillar moved, a third. And then I stepped out into the moonlight.
Madam! Madam! Madam, this is a mosque. You have no right to be here at all. You should have taken off your shoes. This is a holy place for Muslims.
I've taken them off.
You have?
I left them at the entrance.
Then I ask your pardon. I am sorry if I startled you.
Yes, I was right, was I not? If I remove my shoes, I am allowed.
Of course, but so few ladies take the trouble, especially if they think there is no one here to see.
That makes no difference. God is here.
Madam.
Please, let me go.
Can I do you some service?
No, no, thank you. Good night.
May I know your name?
Mrs. Moore.
I was now in the shadow of the gateway, and advancing, he found that I was old, with a red face and white hair. My voice had deceived him.
Mrs. Moore, I am afraid I startled you. I shall tell my friends about you. God is here. Very good, very fine indeed. I think you are newly arrived in India?
Yes. How did you know?
By the way you address me.
May I call you a carriage?
I've only come from the club. They're doing a play that I've seen in London, and it was so hot.
I think you ought not to walk at night alone, Mrs. Moore. There are bad characters about, and leopards may come across from the Malabar Hills. Snakes also.
Snakes? Goodness me.
And a six-spot beetle. You pick it up, it bites, you die.
But you walk alone yourself.
Oh, I am used to it.
Used to snakes?
I'm a doctor. Snakes don't dare bite me. Mrs. Moore, may I ask you, why do you come to India at this time of year, just as the cold weather is ending?
To visit my son. He's the city magistrate here.
Our city's magistrate is Mr. Heslop.
He is my son, all the same. I was married twice.
Your first husband died?
And sadly, so did my second husband.
Then is the city magistrate the entire of your family now?
No, there are younger ones, Ralph and Stella, in England.
And the gentleman here, is he Ralph and Stella's half-brother?
Quite right.
Mrs. Moore, this is quite strange, because, like yourself, I have also lost my wife.
I am sorry. She must have been very young.
She was. But happily, I have two sons and a daughter.
What are your children's names? Not also Ronnie, Ralph and Stella, surely.
No, indeed. The first is called Ahmed, the second Kareem, and the third, she is the eldest, Jamila. Three children are enough.
I agree.
Would you care to see over the Minto Hospital one morning?
Thank you, I've already seen it. Though it's a shame I could not see it with you.
I suppose the civil surgeon took you.
Yes, and Mrs. Callender.
Ah, a very charming lady.
Possibly, when one knows her better.
You don't like her?
She was certainly intending to be kind, but I did not find her exactly charming.
Major Callender's behaviour to me is not charming. He interrupts me every day from where I am dining with my friends, and I go at once, mm-hmm. breaking up my entertainment, and he is not there. Not even a message. Is this charming? But what does it matter? I can do nothing and he knows it. I'm just a subordinate. My time is of no value. You understand me, Mrs. Moore. You know what I feel. If only all the others resembled you.
I don't think I understand people very well. I only know if I like or dislike them.
Then you are an Oriental. May I escort you back to the club?
Thank you, yes. Perhaps you would care to join me.
I am not a member, but I can walk you to the gates.
Surely, as my guest.
Indians are not allowed into the Chandrapur Club, even as guests.
Aziz said this simply. He did not expatiate on his wrongs now, being happy. On his way back from the club, as he strolled downhill beneath the lovely moon and saw again the beautiful mosque, he seemed to own the land as much as anyone owned it. What did it matter if a few flabby Hindus had preceded him there, and a few chilly English succeeded? Having had such a special moment in that beautiful mosque with the nice young Indian man, I found the club stifling. The third act of Cousin Kate was well advanced. The heat was immense, and so I headed into the billiard room.
I want to see the real India.
Adela Quested, the queer, cautious girl whom my son Ronnie had commissioned me to bring from England. He and Adela would probably, though not certainly, marry.
I want to see it too, and I only wish we could. Apparently the Turtons will arrange something for next Tuesday.
Oh, it will end in an elephant ride. It always does. But where have you been off to? Did you succeed in catching the moon in the Ganges?
We had made such a romantic voyage across the Mediterranean and through the sands of Egypt to the harbour of Bombay, to find only a gridiron of bungalows at the end of it. But I did not take the disappointment as seriously as Adela, because I was 40 years older and learned that life never gives us what we want at the moment that we consider appropriate. Adventures do occur, but not punctually.
I went to the mosque, but I did not catch the moon. Ah,
I think the show has finally ended.
Thank goodness for that.
It was the anthem of the Army of Occupation. It reminded every member of the club that he or she was British and was in exile. Like my son, Ronnie.
Adela, have a drink. Mother, have another.
Thank you, but no, Ronnie.
I'm weary of drinking. What I want to see is the real India.
Fielding, how is one to see the real India?
Try seeing Indians.
Who was that?
Our schoolmaster, Government College. Ah, Mrs. Callender, Mrs. Turton.
Did I hear correctly? You want to meet Indians?
As if one could avoid seeing them.
Well, I've avoided them, excepting my own servant. I've scarcely spoken to an Indian since landing.
Oh, but lucky you.
But I want to see them. Oh.
Natives. Oh, I fancy.
Sounds positively ludicrous.
I was a nurse before my marriage and came across them a great deal, so I know. I mean, I really do know the truth about Indians. One's only hope was to hold sternly aloof,
even from one's patients.
Why, the kindest thing one can do to a native is to let him die.
How if he went to heaven, Mrs. Callender?
Well, he can go where he likes as long as he doesn't come near me. Oh, they give me the creeps.
You really want to meet the Aryan brother, Miss Creston? That can be easily fixed up. I didn't realise he'd amuse you.
Not amuse. That sounds a little callous, Mr. Turton.
You can practically see any type you like. Take your choice. I know the government people and the landowners. Heslop here can get hold of the barrister crew.
Yes.
While if you want to specialise on education, we can come down on Fielding.
I'm tired of seeing picturesque figures pass before me as a frieze. It was wonderful when we first landed, but that superficial glamour soon goes.
Would you ladies like a bridge party?
I'm afraid, Mr. Turton, I don't care much for card games.
Not the game, but a party to bridge the gulf between East and West. The expression is my own invention.
An excellent expression, sir.
I only want to meet those Indians whom you come across socially. As your friends.
But goodness me. We don't come across them socially.
Heavens above, what a thought.
It is very good of you to show my mother and Adela such wonderful hospitality. A bridge party.
I'll make the arrangements. It's late. Time to head home. Heslop, Mrs. Moore, Adela, I bid you good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
It is very decent of the great man. I wish I could have arranged something myself, but when you know the natives better, you'll realise it's easier for the Barra Sahib than for me. They know him. They know he can't be fooled. I'm still fresh, comparatively. Shall I fetch your cloak, Mother? You look tired.
I was tired, and the club had stupefied me.
Miss Quested. What a name.
You did not take to the young lady.
No, I did not. Most ungracious and cranky.
Hush now, darling.
I trust she hasn't been brought out to marry nice little Heslop.
Rather looks that way.
Such an awkward thing.
Miss Quested naturally made mistakes, but India does wonders for the judgment, especially during the hot weather. It has even done wonders for Fielding.
Fielding? He is certainly not Pucker, so he had better marry Miss Quested, because she isn't Pucker either.
Sahib? Sahib?
Let's get home, dearest.
I woke up outside as I watched the moon, whose radiance stained with primrose the purple of the surrounding sky. In England, the moon had seemed dead and alien. Here, I was caught in the shawl of the night together with Earth and all the other stars. A sudden sense of unity, of kinship with the heavenly bodies passed into me and out like water through a tank, leaving a strange freshness behind.
Oh, look, the mosque. Doesn't it look peaceful? That's where I got to.
When?
Between the acts.
But, Mother, you can't do that sort of thing.
Can't, Mother?
No, not in this country. It's not done. There's the danger from snakes, for one thing.
So the young man said.
You met a young man in the mosque and he never let me know. That sounds very romantic. Was he nice?
Very nice.
Who was he?
A doctor. I don't know his name.
What? I don't know of a doctor in Chandrapur. What did he look like?
Small, handsome, with a little moustache and quick eyes. He called out to me when I was in the dark part of the mosque about my shoes. That was how we started talking. He was afraid I had them on. He told me about his children and then walked me back to the club. He knows you well.
I wish you had pointed him out to me in the club. I can't make out who he is.
He said he wasn't allowed in the club.
Oh, good gracious. Not a Mohammedan. You were talking to a native.
A Mohammedan? How perfectly magnificent. Ronnie, isn't that like your mother? While we talk about seeing the real India, she goes and sees it and then forgets she's seen it.
He called to you in the mosque, did he? How? Impudently? What was he doing there himself at that time of night? It's not their prayer time. Trickery?
Not trickery. Maybe impudence. His nerves were all on edge, I could tell from his voice. As soon as I answered, he altered.
Oh, well, really, Mother. Oh, look. There's your Ganges.
Our attention was diverted. Below us, a radiance had suddenly appeared. It belonged to neither water nor moonlight, but stood like a luminous sheaf upon the fields of darkness.
What is that?
It's where the new sandbank is forming. The dark raveled bit at the top is the sandbank. The dead bodies flow down the river from Benares, or would if the crocodiles let them. It's not much of a body that gets down to Chandrapur.
Crocodiles down it too. What a terrible river. What a wonderful river. I've just remembered. The young doctor said he worked at Minto Hospital.
Oh, that's Dr. Aziz.
Aziz?
What a charming name.
He's quite all right. So you and he had a talk. Did you gather he was well disposed?
Yes, quite.
Did he seem to tolerate us? The brutal conqueror, the sun-dried bureaucrat, that sort of thing.
Yes, except he doesn't much care for the calendars.
The Major will be interested.
Ronnie? Ronnie, you're never going to pass it on to Major Calendar.
Yes, I think I should.
No, you can't.
A private conversation.
Nothing is private in India. He abused the Major to impress you.
So what?
It's the educated native's latest dodge. Swaggering, a show of manly independence.
Oh, I don't understand.
There's always something behind every remark the natives make. If nothing else, he's trying to increase his izzet, in plain Anglo-Saxon, to score.
You never used to judge people like this at home.
India isn't home.
You really mustn't tell Major Calendar.
It would be a betrayal of my trust, and besides, I like Dr. Aziz.
I won't say anything, all right? Just both of you, stop talking about him.
The collector kept his word and issued invitation cards to numerous Indian gentlemen and their womenfolk in the neighbourhood. But the bridge party was not a success.
My husband will be up from his office in a moment and start the thing. I have no idea what we have to do.
What do you think, Adela? The great point to remember is that no one who's here matters. Those who matter don't come. Isn't that so, Mrs. Turner?
Absolutely true.
Most of the people you see here are seditious at heart, and the rest would run squealing.
I refuse to shake hands with any of them. Why they come at all, I don't know. I mean, they hate it as much as we do.
Do kindly tell us who those ladies are.
You are superior to them. Don't ever forget that. You're superior to everyone in India, except one or two of the Ranis, and they are on an equality.
Miss Quested now had her desired opportunity. Friendly Indians were before her, and she tried to make them talk. But she failed. She strove in vain against the echoing walls of their civility.
Please tell the ladies that I wish we could speak their language, but we've only just come to their country.
I was equally unsuccessful. Mrs. Turton waited for us with a detached expression. She had known what nonsense it all was from the first.
The shorter lady, she is my wife. She is Mrs. Bhattacharya. And the taller lady with my sister, she is Mrs. Das.
Mr. Bhattacharya, how good of you to come. Aren't the gardens looking wonderful this time of year? The Mem Sahib has been torturing the gardener over the roses. She's very particular.
Meanwhile, the collector had been going his rounds. He made pleasant remarks and a few jokes, but at the proper moment, he retired to the English side of the lawn. After Mr. Turton, the official who did his duty best was Mr. Fielding, the principal of the little government college.
Ah, Mr. Bowes, I do like your cravat. You look very smart. I feel rather underdressed. Food is delicious.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Don't mind if I drink.
Athletic and cheerful, he romped about, talked to anyone and ate anything. When the refreshments came, he stayed on the Indian side of the lawn.
I say, Miss Quested, I wonder if perhaps you might like to come to tea at my place.
I'd like to come very much indeed, and so would Mrs. Moore, I know.
I'm rather a hermit, owing to my work and so on. I don't get on much to the club.
And we never get down from it. I envy you being with Indians.
Would you like to meet one or two?
Oh, please. This party today makes me so angry and miserable. I think my countrymen out here must be mad. Fancy inviting guests and not treating them properly. They make me perfectly ashamed.
Fielding resented his fellow countrymen's behaviour too. But he did not say so to the girl, for he found something theoretical in her outburst.
Do you care for Indian music? There's an old professor down at the college who sings.
Oh, just what we wanted to hear. Do you know Dr. Aziz?
Well, I know all about him. I haven't met him, but I could ask him along too. Will this Thursday suit?
Perfect.
No, I won't ask the city magistrate to bring you. I know he'll be busy at the time.
Yes, Ronnie's always hard worked.
Miss Quested glanced at the distant Marabar Hills, which had crept near, as was their custom at sunset. How lovely they were. But she couldn't touch them. In front, like a shutter, fell a vision of her married life. She and Ronnie would look into the club like this every evening, then drive home to dress. They would see the Callenders, the Turtons and Burtons, and invite them and be invited by them. Colour would remain. The pageant of birds in the early morning, brown bodies, white turbans and idols whose flesh was scarlet or blue. Perched up on the seat of a dog cart, she would see them. But the force that lies behind the colour and movement would escape her even more effectually than it did now. She would see India always as a frieze, never as a spirit. Adela and I were very much looking forward to the upcoming visit to Mr. Fielding's. He seemed such an interesting man to me, refreshingly different from the rest of my fellow patriots. In the meantime, there was a row the morning after the mosque between Major Callender and Dr. Aziz. They were always having rows.
Damn you, Aziz, why didn't you come promptly when I summoned you?
Sir, excuse me, I did. I mounted my bike and it bust in front of the cow hospital, so I had to find a donga.
Bust in front of the cow hospital? Did it? And how did you come to be there?
I beg your pardon?
Oh, Lord, when I live here, and you live there, not 10 minutes from me, and the cow hospital is right ever so far away from the other side of you there, then how did you come to be passing the cow hospital on the way to me? Now, do some work for a change.
Major Callender didn't wait for an excuse, which was a sound one. The cow hospital was in a straight line between Hamadullah's house and his own, so Dr. Aziz had naturally passed it. Callender never realised that the educated Indians visited one another constantly.
Liars, lazy, good-for-nothings. 20 years in this damn country and no one ever tells the truth.
Dr. Aziz watched him go with amusement. He felt that the English were a comic institution and he enjoyed being misunderstood by them.
No grit, no guts.
But in his heart, Major Callender knew that if Dr. Aziz, and not he, had operated last year on Mrs. Greyforth's appendix, the old lady would probably have lived, and this did not dispose him any better towards his subordinate. Back at his small bungalow, Dr. Aziz received an invitation to Fielding's for tea on Thursday.
Dear Mr. Fielding, thank you for your kind invitation. I would be delighted to attend your dwelling for tea. Yours, affectionately. Yes, affectionately, Dr. Aziz.
When Adela had gone to bed, Ronnie wanted my advice and support, but resented any interference.
Mother. Does Adela talk to you much? I'm so driven with work, I don't see her as much as I hoped, but I hope she finds things comfortable.
Adela and I talk mostly about India. Dear, since you mention it, you're quite right. You ought to be more alone with her than you are.
Yes, perhaps, but then people would gossip.
Well, they must gossip sometime. Let them gossip.
They're so odd out here. It's not like home. One's always facing the footlights, as the Bara Sahib said. Take a silly little example. When Adela went out to the boundary of the club compound and Fielding followed her, I saw Mrs. Callender notice it. They notice everything until they're perfectly sure you're their sort.
Oh, I don't think Adela will ever be quite their sort. She's much too individual.
I know. That's so remarkable about her.
Mm.
Probably she's heard tales of the heat. But of course, I should pack her off to the hills every April. I'm not one to keep a wife grilling in the plains.
Oh, it wouldn't be the weather.
There's nothing in India but the weather, my dear mother. It's the alpha and omega of the whole affair.
It's much more the British themselves who are likely to get on Adela's nerves. She doesn't think they behave pleasantly to Indians, you see.
What did I tell you? Oh, I knew it last week. Oh, how like a woman to worry over a side issue.
A side issue? A side issue? How can it be that?
We're not out here for the purpose of behaving pleasantly.
What do you mean?
What I say. We're out here to do justice and keep the peace. Them's my sentiments. India's not a drawing room.
Your sentiments are those of a god.
India likes gods.
And Englishmen like posing as gods.
What do you and Adela want me to do? Go against my class, against all the people I respect and admire out here? Lose such power as I have for doing good in this country because my behaviour isn't pleasant? I'm out here to do work, mind, to hold this wretched country by force. I'm not a missionary or a Labour member or a vague, sentimental, sympathetic literary man. I'm just a servant of the government. It's the profession you wanted me to choose myself. And that is that. We're not pleasant in India. We don't intend to be pleasant. We've something more important to do.
Ronnie! Listen to yourself.
Every day I work hard in the court trying to decide which of two untrue accounts is the less untrue. Trying to dispense justice fearlessly to protect the weak against the less weak, the incoherent against the plausible, surrounded by lies and flattery. I expect no gratitude, no recognition for this. It is my duty. But I do expect sympathy from my own people, and except from newcomers, get it.
His words without his voice might have impressed me. But when I heard the self-satisfied lilt of them, I felt quite illogically that this was not the last word on India. One touch of regret, not the canny substitute, but the true regret from the heart, would have made him a different man, and the British Empire a different institution. I'm going to argue that the English are here to be pleasant.
How is that?
Because India is part of the earth, and God has put us on the earth in order to be pleasant to each other. God is love. God has put us on earth to love our neighbours and to show it. And he is omnipresent, even in India, to see how we are succeeding.
Mm, yeah. I quite see that. I suppose I ought to get off to my files now.
Yeah.
And you'll be going to bed. Good night, Mother.
Good night. Ronnie approved of religion as long as it endorsed the national anthem, but he objected when it attempted to influence his life. I felt that I had made a mistake in mentioning God, but I found him increasingly difficult to avoid as I grew older. And he had been constantly in my thoughts since I entered India, though oddly enough, he satisfied me less. I regretted afterwards that I had not kept to the real serious subject that had caused me to visit India, namely Ronnie and Adela. Would they, or would they not, succeed in becoming engaged to be married? Mr. Fielding had been caught by India late. He was over 40 when he arrived there. He was a hard-bitten, good-tempered fellow on the verge of middle age, with a belief in education, and he did not care who he taught. The world, he believed, is a globe of men who are trying to reach one another, and can best do so by the help of goodwill plus culture and intelligence, a creed ill-suited to Chandrapur. But he had come out too late to lose it. The feeling grew amongst the British in Chandrapur that Fielding was a bad and disruptive force, not pucker. The women especially did not like him because he took no notice of them.
Hello? Hello, Mr. Fielding? It is Dr. Aziz. I have arrived for tea, as invited by your good self.
Ah, Dr. Aziz, I'm just finishing getting dressed. I'll be with you shortly. Do make yourself at home.
Oh, may I really, Mr. Fielding? It's very good of you. I like unconventional behaviour so extremely. The fact is, I have long wanted to meet you. I have heard so much about your warm heart from the Nawab Bahadur. When I was greener, I'll tell you what, I used to wish you to fall ill so that we could meet that way. I said to myself, how does Mr. Fielding look this morning? Perhaps pale. And the civil surgeon is pale too. He will not be able to attend upon him when the shivering commences. I should have been sent for instead.
You know me by sight then?
Of course, of course. You know me.
I know you very well by name.
I have been here such a short time and always in the bazaar. No wonder you have never seen me, and I wonder you know me by name. I say, Mr. Fielding.
Yes?
Guess what I look like before you come out. That'll be a kind of game.
You're 5 feet, 9 inches high.
Fielding surmised this much through the ground glass of the bedroom door.
Jolly good. What next? Have I not a venerable white beard?
Last.
Oh, anything wrong?
I've stamped on my last collar stud.
Take mine.
Only if you have a spare one.
Yes, 1 minute.
Not if you're wearing it yourself.
In my pocket.
Stepping aside, so that his outline might vanish, he wrenched off his collar and pulled out of his shirt the back stud, a gold stud, which was part of a set that his brother-in-law had brought him from Europe.
Here it is.
Replacing his collar, he prayed that it would not spring up at the back during tea.
Ah, finally we meet face to face.
Here, your collar stud.
Oh, thank you so much.
Ah, but I always thought that Englishmen kept their rooms so tidy. It seems that it is not so. I need not be so ashamed. May I sit on your bed?
By all means.
He sat down gaily on the bed, then forgetting himself entirely, drew up his legs and folded them under him.
Everything ranged coldly on shelves, was what I thought. Do I say, Mr. Fielding, is the stud not going to go in?
Hey, Madute.
Accept our sentence, please. Will you teach me some new words and so improve my English?
Fielding doubted whether everything ranged coldly on shelves could be improved. He was often struck by the liveliness with which the younger generation handled a foreign tongue. They altered the idiom, but they could say whatever they wanted to say quickly.
Let me put in your stud. Ah, I see. The shirt back hole is rather small, and to rip it wider, a pity.
Why in hell does one wear collars at all?
We wear them to pass the police.
Eh?
Well, if I'm biking in English dress, starch collar, hat with ditch, they take no notice. When I wear affairs, they cry, "Your lamp's out." Lord Curzon did not consider this when he urged natives of India to retain their picturesque costumes. Hooray! Stud's gone in.
Thank heavens.
Sometimes I shut my eyes and dream I have splendid clothes again and am riding into battle behind Alamgir. Mr. Fielding, must not India have been beautiful then?
Yes.
With the Mughal Empire at its height and Alamgir reigning in Delhi upon the peacock throne.
Yes. Two ladies are coming to tea to meet you. I think you know them.
Meet me? I know no ladies.
Not Mrs. Moore and Miss Quested?
Oh, yes. I remember. An excessively aged lady. But will you please repeat the name of her companion?
Miss Quested.
Yeah, just as you wish.
You can talk to Miss Quested about the peacock throne, if you like. She's artistic, they say.
Yeah.
And besides the English ladies, I'm expecting one of my assistants, Narayani Godbole.
Oh, the Deccani ascetic. Do you know what Deccani Brahmins say? That England conquered India from them. From them, mind, and not from the Mughals. Is that not like their cheek? They've even bribed it to appear in textbooks, for they are so subtle and immensely rich.
Professor Godbole is less traditional,
shall we say.
Professor Godbole must be quite unlike all other Hindu ascetics from all I can hear, see. A most sincere lady.
Dr. Aziz felt Fielding's fundamental goodwill. His own went out to it and grappled beneath the shifting tides of emotion, which can alone bear the voyager to an anchorage, but may also carry him across it onto the rocks. He was safe, really, and he felt in Fielding he really had made an English friend.
Ah, just now I see Mrs. Moore and what's her name coming.
Dr. Aziz was disappointed that other guests were coming, for he preferred to be alone with his new friend. As he watched us approaching Fielding's bungalow, he was irritated and anxious. What good could come of befriending English women? Dr. Aziz found myself and Adela easy to talk to because he treated us as men. Beauty would have troubled him. But in his eyes, I was so old and Adela so plain that he was spared this awkwardness. As far as he was concerned, Adela's angular body and the freckles on her face were terrible defects, and he wondered how God could have been so unkind to any female form. His attitude to her remained entirely straightforward in consequence.
It must be some point of Indian etiquette.
There honestly is none. We are by nature a most informal people.
I'm afraid we must have made some blunder and given offence.
That is even more impossible. But may I know the facts?
The Bhattacharyas were to send their carriage for us this morning at 9. It never came. We waited and waited and waited.
Some misunderstanding.
I don't think so. They gave up going to Calcutta to entertain us. We must have made some stupid blunder, we both feel sure.
No, I wouldn't worry about that.
Exactly what Mr. Heslop tells me. But if one doesn't worry, how is one to understand?
Slack Hindus, they have no idea of society. I think for my own part, they grew ashamed of their house and that is why they did not send.
Well, that's a notion.
I do so hate mysteries. We English do.
I dislike them, not because I'm English, but from my own personal point of view. I like mysteries, but I rather dislike muddles.
A mystery is a muddle.
Oh, do you think so, Mr. Fielding?
Mystery is only a high-sounding term for a muddle. No advantage in stirring it up in either case. Aziz and I know well that India's a muddle.
There'll be no muddle when you come to see me, Mrs. Moore. Oh, and everyone. I invite you all. Oh, please.
Oh, thank you. We would love to come.
Yes, how kind of you, Dr. Aziz. Let us know a suitable day and give us your address.
Dr. Aziz thought of his bungalow with horror. It was a detestable shanty near a low bazaar.
Oh, but we will talk of something else now. I wish I lived here. See this beautiful room. See those curves at the bottom of the arches? What delicacy. It is the architecture of question and answer. Mrs. Moore, you are in India.
Yes.
I do love it here. It was an audience hall built in the 18th century for some high official or other. And even though it's all made of wood, it reminded me of the Loggia dei Lanci at Florence.
Oh, I don't think I know.
Yes, now you mention it, I see the resemblance. And the air from the garden pours so freely. So beautiful.
Look at the carving on the pavilions. Think of the hours it took. The little roofs are curved to imitate bamboo. So pretty. And the bamboos waving by the tank outside. Mrs. Moore! Mrs. Moore!
Well?
You remember the water by our mosque?
Yes.
It comes down and fills this tank. A skillful arrangement of the emperors. They stopped in Chandrapur on their way to Bengal. They loved water, and so wherever they went, they created fountains, gardens, hammams. I was telling Mr. Fielding I would give anything to serve them.
He was wrong about the water, which no emperor, however skillful, can cause to gravitate uphill. Fielding did not want to pull him up. He dulled his craving for verbal truth and cared chiefly for truth of mood. As for Adela, She accepted everything Dr. Aziz said as true verbally. In her ignorance, she regarded him as India, and never surmised that his outlook was limited and his method inaccurate, and that no one is India.
Is that a mango tree there?
Yes, indeed. Very delicious when they're in season.
Sadly, they're not in season.
Professor! Welcome. Please, please meet Mrs. Moore.
Good afternoon.
Miss Quested.
How do you do?
And Dr. Aziz. Namaste.
Namaste.
The ascetic lady, polite and enigmatic, did not impede Dr. Aziz's eloquence, and even applauded it. She was elderly and wizened with grey-blue eyes, and her complexion was as fair as a European's. She wore a plain white sari, and her grey hair was long and loose. We were interested in her, and hoped she would supplement Dr. Aziz by saying something about religion. But she only ate and ate, smiling, never letting her eyes catch sight of her hand.
We have a proverb in Urdu. What does unhappiness matter when we are all unhappy together? Which comes in conveniently after mangoes.
Yeah.
Oh, misquested. Do wait for mangoes. Why not settle altogether in India?
Oh, I'm afraid I can't do that.
Adela made the remark without thinking what it meant. Much later, she realised that it was an important remark and ought to have been made in the first place to Ronnie.
Visitors like you are too rare. Such affability is seldom seen. But what can we offer to detain them?
Mangoes! Mangoes!
Even mangoes can be got in England now. They ship them in ice-cold rooms. Mm. You can make India in England, apparently. Just as you can make England in India.
I will send you up a few healthy sweets. I will give myself that pleasure.
I think I should like to have a look round the college, Mr. Fielding.
Certainly. I would be delighted.
Shall I?
No, dear. You stay.
Miss Quested, Professor Godbole's sweets are delicious. A real Indian treat. In my poor position, I can give you nothing.
I don't know why you say that when you've so kindly asked us to your house.
He thought again of his bungalow with horror. Good heavens, the stupid girl had taken him at his word. What was he to do?
Yes. All that is settled. I invite you all to see me at the Marabar Caves. I shall be delighted.
The Marabar Caves?
Oh, that is a most magnificent entertainment compared to my poor sweets. Has not Miss Quested visited our Marabar Caves already?
What are these caves?
I myself have never seen them. Always intended to.
Oh, my dear young sir, the pot and the kettle... Have you ever heard that useful proverb?
Are they large caves?
No, not large.
Well, do describe them, Professor Godbole.
It will be a great honour. there is an entrance in the rock which you enter, and through the entrance is the cave.
Something like the caves at Elephanta?
Oh, no, not at all. At Elephanta, there are sculptures of Shiva and Parvati. There are no sculptures at Marabar.
They are immensely holy, no doubt.
Oh, no, no.
Still, they are ornamented in some way.
Oh, no.
Well, why are they so famous? We all talk of the famous Marabar caves. Perhaps that is our empty brag.
No, I should not... quite say that.
Very mysterious. Makes me want to go even more.
But is it worth going?
It would be an immensely interesting experience.
I don't care for your excuses. I'm looking for Fielding. Does anyone see where he is? Mother? Mother, where are you? What's happened to Fielding? Where's my mother?
Good evening.
I want you and Mother at once. There's to be polo. Some soldier men have come in. Come along and I'll tell you about it.
Your mother will return shortly, sir. There is but little to see at our poor college.
Come along up and join us, Mr. Heslop. Sit down till your mother turns up.
We really must be going. I've come to fetch you. We're expected. Please, do hurry.
Ronnie did not mean to be rude to the two Indians, But the only link he could be conscious of with an Indian was the official, and neither happened to be his subordinate. As private individuals, he forgot them and ignored them. I came back from the tour of the college with Fielding to find my son fuming in the garden.
Mother, do collect your things. We're leaving now.
All right, dear.
I say, old man, do excuse me, but I think perhaps you oughtn't have left Miss Quested alone.
I'm sorry. What's up?
Oh, I'm the sun-dried bureaucrat, no doubt. Still, I don't like to see an English girl left with two Indians.
She stopped by her own wish, old man.
Yes, that's all right in England.
I really can't see the harm.
Can't you see? The fellow's a bounder.
He isn't a bounder. His nerves are on edge, that's all.
What should have upset his precious nerves? I never even spoke to him.
Oh, well, come along now and take your ladies away. The catastrophe's over. I'm awfully sorry you feel I've been remiss. I didn't mean to be.
Goodbye, Mr. Fielding. And thank you so much. What lovely college building.
Such an interesting afternoon.
Goodbye, Dr. Assese. Such a delight to properly make your acquaintance.
And yours. I'm Miss Quested. You'll jolly, jolly well not forget those caves, will you? I'll fix the whole show up in a jiffy. Ah, what a shame you leave India so soon. Do reconsider your decision. Do stay.
Oh, yes, sir. Goodbye, Professor Coppola.
We nodded our thanks to the professor and followed Ronnie to the car. As we drove away, Adela was furious at Ronnie's rude behaviour. I was dismayed too by my son's arrogance. He had changed.
Mrs. Moore, your delightful doctor's decided on a picnic instead of a party in his house. We're to meet him out there. Ah. You, myself, Mr. Fielding, Professor Godbillet. Exactly the same party.
Out where?
The Maribor Caves.
Well, I'm blessed. Did he descend to any details?
He did not. If you had spoken to him, we could have arranged them. Have I said anything funny?
I was only thinking how the worthy doctor's collar climbed up his neck.
I thought we were discussing the caves.
So I was. Aziz was exquisitely dressed from tie pin to spats, but he'd forgotten his back collar stud. And there you have the Indian all over. Inattention to detail, the fundamental slackness that reveals the race. Similarly, to meet in the caves, as if they were a clock at Charing Cross. When they're miles from a station and each other, are you too pledged to this expedition, Mother?
Mother is pledged to nothing, certainly not to this polo. Will you drive up to the bungalow first and drop me there, please? I prefer to rest.
Drop me too. I don't want to watch the polo either, I'm sure.
Simpler to drop the polo. I won't have you messing about with Indians anymore. If you want to go to the Maribor Caves, you'll go under British auspices.
I've never heard of these caves. I don't know what or where they are, but I really can't have so much quarrelling and tiresomeness.
India had developed sides of Ronnie's character that Adela had never admired.
We must have a thorough talk, Ronnie, I'm afraid.
I must apologise. I didn't mean to order you and Mother about, but of course the way those Bengalis let you down this morning annoyed me, and I don't want that sort of thing to keep happening.
Oh, it's nothing to do with them that I
no,
need to...
but Aziz would make some similar muddle over the caves. He meant nothing by the invitation. I could tell by his voice. It's just their way of being pleasant.
It's something very different. Nothing to do with the caves. I finally decided we're not going to be married.
The news hurt Ronnie very much. He had heard Dr. Aziz announce that she would not return to the country, but had paid no attention to the remark, for he never dreamt that an Indian could be a channel of communication between two English people.
You never said we should marry, my dear girl. You never bound either yourself or me. But don't let this upset you.
Adela felt ashamed. How decent he was. And then she instantly felt lonely and miserable. Her hand touched his, and one of the thrills so frequent in the animal kingdom passed between them and announced that all their difficulties were only a lover's quarrel. Ronnie caressed her hand, and their firm and mutual pressure surely meant to say something.
Actually, Ronnie, I should like to take that back. I'm sorry.
So, you want to marry me, after all?
I do.
Oh.
The strange ending to a very pleasant tea party at Fielding's left me in a muddle. 3 days later, Dr. Aziz fell ill, and he lay in a bed in his bungalow pretending to be very sick. It was a touch of fever, and it was Sunday. He could hear church bells as he drowsed, both from the civil station and from the missionaries out beyond the slaughterhouse, different bells and rung with different intent. For one set was calling firmly to the British, and the other feebly to mankind.
God, I'm dying. Oh.
Dr. Aziz thought about women. Yes, he did want to spend an evening with some girls, singing and all that, the vague jollity that would culminate in voluptuousness. If Major Callender had been an Indian, he would have remembered what young men are and granted 2 or 3 days' leave to Calcutta without asking questions.
God. Ya Allah. How shall I see Mr. Fielding again? If he entered this room, the disgrace of it would kill me.
He grimaced up at the horrible mass that hung from the ceiling. The nucleus was a wire which had been inserted as a homage to electricity. Electricity had paid no attention, and a colony of eye flies had come instead and blackened the coils with their bodies.
Aziz? Oh. Salam, Aziz, my dear fellow. We are greatly concerned. When a doctor falls ill, it is a serious matter. How are you?
Assalamu alaikum, Muhammadullah ji. Feverish. How very kind of you to inquire after my health.
The engineer's nephew, Rafi, told me that Professor Godbally is also ill. Huh? They say diarrhea. It could be an early case of cholera. Dr. Panalal is attending her.
And then she'll be dead in 24 hours. Arz kiya hai. An ocean of blood churns around me. Alas, were these all.
Wow, wow.
The future will show what more remains for me to see.
Wow, wow. Ghalib, beautiful words. Aziz, my wife was asking, why don't you take a new wife?
Oh,
then you would not suffer like this alone.
Once is enough. I have done my duty.
Yes, yes. You carry on your family, 2 boys and their sister. My wife says you send them the whole of your salary and live like a low-grade clerk and tell no one of the reason.
Perhaps I will marry, but not now.
You mustn't put off what you think right. That is why India is in such a plight, because we put off things. Mm.
Dr. Aziz?
Ooh. Ah, Dr. Panalal.
Gentlemen, you will excuse me. I have come to inquire by Major Callender's orders.
Here he lies.
Dr. Aziz, may I take your temperature? Open mouth, please.
Dr. Panalal loathed his young colleague, Dr. Aziz, and he would have liked to have reported to Major Callender that Dr. Aziz was shamming. But he might want a day in bed too one day, so sympathy seemed the safer course.
Your hand also? Some temperature. He should remain in bed. How is stomach?
Fine.
How head?
Slight headache.
You must rest today. I will call back tomorrow.
Oh, this is a great relief to us. It is very good of you to call, Dr. Sahib. We know how busy you are and how much illness there is in the city. Do you attend to Professor Godbally? How is she?
We hope her diarrhea is ceasing.
She progresses, but not from diarrhea.
We are in some anxiety over it. If you could tell us the name of her complaint, we should be grateful to you.
Hemorrhoids.
And so much for the report of cholera.
Cholera? Who spreads such untrue reports about my patients? This city is full of misstatements, and the originators of them ought to be discovered and punished authoritatively.
I say, is he ill or isn't he?
Oh, Mr. Fielding, please sit down.
It is good of Mr. Fielding to condescend to visit our friend. We are touched by this great kindness.
Don't talk to him like that. He doesn't want it. And he doesn't want 3 chairs. He's not 3 Englishmen. No doubt Major Callender has told you that I am shamming.
Well, are you?
He is ill and he is not ill. And I suppose that most of us are in that same case. The whole world looks to be dying. Still, it doesn't die. So we must assume the existence of a beneficent providence. Does Mr. Fielding think it's true?
Think which is true?
The world isn't dying, I'm certain of that.
No. The existence of Providence.
I don't believe in Providence.
But how then can you believe in God?
I don't believe in God.
Mr. Fielding. Gentlemen. Mr. Fielding, is it correct that most are atheists in England now?
The educated, thoughtful people, I should say so. Mm-hmm. The truth is that the West doesn't bother much over belief and disbelief these days.
And does not morality also decline?
Mm. Yeah, it depends on what you call... Well, yes, I suppose morality does decline.
Excuse the question, but if this is the case, how is England justified in holding India?
Well, I'm only here personally because I needed a job. I cannot tell you why England is here or whether she ought to be. It's beyond me.
Well-qualified Indians also need jobs in the educational...
Well, I guess they do. I got in first.
But excuse me again. Is it fair an Englishman should occupy one when Indians are available?
Yeah.
Of course, I mean nothing personally. We are delighted you should be here, and we benefit greatly by this frank talk.
I am delighted to be here too. That's my answer. That's my only excuse. I can't tell you anything about fairness. Mm. However big a Bard Marsh one is, if one is happy in consequence, that's some justification.
Dr. Lal! Dr. Aziz, you sit on my leg. I beg pardon.
Come along, we tire the invalid. Aziz, my dear boy, get well quickly, for I do not know what our little circle would do without you.
I shall not forget those affectionate words.
Mr. Fielding.
Hamid Allah, Dr. Lal.
I will call back tomorrow.
The noisy Indian's gone. Dr. Aziz and Fielding were finally alone.
So, Mr. Fielding, here's the celebrated hospitality of the East. Look at the flies. Look at the chunam coming off the walls. Isn't it jolly?
I think I should leave you to rest.
Before you go, will you please unlock that drawer?
Here.
Do you see a piece of brown paper at the top? Open it. She was my wife.
Oh. My. She is beautiful.
You are the first Englishman she has ever come before.
Really, I don't know why you pay me this great compliment, Aziz, but I do appreciate it.
Oh, it's nothing. She was not a highly educated woman, or even beautiful. Yeah, but put it away. You would have seen her, so why should you not see her photograph?
You would have allowed me to see her.
All men are my brothers. And as soon as one behaves as such, he may see my wife. Mr. Fielding, no one can ever realize how much kindness we Indians need. We do not even realize it ourselves. We do not forget, though we may seem to. Kindness. More kindness. And even after that, more kindness. I assure you, it is the only hope. We can't build up India except on what we feel. I showed her to you because I have nothing else to show. You may look round the whole of my bungalow now and empty everything. I have no other secrets. My three children live away with their grandmama, and that is all.
Fielding sat down by the bed, flattered at the trust reposed in him, yet rather sad. He felt old. He wished that he too could be carried away on waves of emotion, kindness, kindness, and more kindness. Yes. That he might supply, but was that really all that the queer nation needed? He looked back at his own life. What a poor crop of secrets it had produced.
Why aren't you married?
Because I've more or less come through without it. The lady I liked wouldn't marry me. That's 15 years ago and now means nothing.
But you haven't children?
None.
Excuse the following question. Have you any illegitimate children?
No. I'd willingly tell you if I had.
Then your name will entirely die out.
It must.
This indifference is what the Oriental will never understand.
No, I don't care for children.
Caring has nothing to do with it.
I don't feel their absence. I'd far rather leave a thought behind me than a child.
Why don't you marry Miss Quested?
Good God, why, the girl's a prig.
Kindly explain, isn't that a bad word?
No, I don't know her, but... she struck me as one of the more pathetic products of Western education. She depresses me.
Huh. But prig, Mr. Fielding, how's that?
Oh, she goes on as if she's at a lecture, trying ever so hard to understand India and life, and occasionally taking a note.
I thought her so nice and sincere.
And I can't marry her even if I wanted to, because she has just become engaged to the city magistrate.
Oh, Has she indeed? Oh, I am so glad.
Dr. Aziz was relieved, for this exempted him from the Marabar expedition.
Yes, you're out of it, my poor chap. No miss quested for Mr. Fielding. However, she's not beautiful and she has practically no breasts.
Really? Aziz?
For the city magistrate, this shall be sufficient, perhaps, and he for her. For you, I shall arrange a lady with breasts like mangoes.
No, you won't.
All right, I won't. But I have to look after you. You can't be too careful, Mr. Fielding. Whatever you say or do in this damned country, there is always some envious fellow on the lookout. I was really a good deal upset that you talked in that fashion about God. You spoke against morality also, and you said you had come to take other people's jobs. All that was very unwise. This is an awful place for scandal.
Thanks for telling me that, yes. I must try to be more careful. If I'm interested, I'm apt to forget myself. Still, it doesn't do any real harm.
But speaking out may get you into trouble.
If I do, I do. I shall survive it. I travel light.
Travel light? You are a most extraordinary race. Is it your climate or what?
Plenty of Indians travel light too, sadhus and such. It's one of the things I admire about your country. Any man can travel light until he has a wife or children. That's part of my case against marriage. I'm a holy man, minus the holiness.
Dr. Aziz was charmed and interested and turned the new idea over in his mind. So this was why Mr. Fielding and a few others were so fearless. They had nothing to lose. But he himself was rooted in society and Islam.
You look tired, my dear chap. I will leave you to your rest. I hope you get better very soon.
Thank you for coming to visit me.
My pleasure.
There goes a strange chap. I trust he won't come to grief.
Dr. Aziz noted that Fielding was truly warm-hearted and unconventional, but not what could be called wise. That frankness of speech in the presence of Hamadullah and Panalal was dangerous and inelegant. But they were friends, brothers. That part was settled. Their compact had been subscribed by the photograph. They trusted one another. Affection had triumphed for once in a way. He dropped off to sleep, replaying a strange part of his conversation with Fielding. There was something in it which made him uneasy.
How do you like English women generally?
Hamidullah liked them in England. Here we never look at them. We have to be careful.
Hamidullah's right. They are much nicer in England. There's something that doesn't suit them out here.
Dr. Aziz kept going over those words of Fielding. What had he meant? There's something that doesn't suit them out here. Pondering, he eventually fell asleep amid happier memories of the last 2 hours. Poetry of Ghalib, female grace, good old Hamadullah, good Fielding, his honoured wife, and dear boys and girls.
In the omnibus of E.M. Forster's A Passage to India, dramatised by Tanika Gupta, Mrs. Moore was played by Penelope Wilson, Adela by Ella Kay.